Today's shiur in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Baba Kama Daf Nun Hey. We're learning today Leilui Nishmas, Bela Werblowski, Bela Bashner Zalman, Abraham Molina, Avram Abba, Ben Baruch Mordechai. And as many of you may know, I'm now on a shul trip, a mission to Eretz Yisrael. That's why you've noticed that some of the dictations have been coming out at somewhat irregular times, and I dictated a couple of shurim ahead because I wouldn't always have the time to dictate while I was here. The shul is doing, Baruch Hashem, so many wonderful things and visiting so many places. And one of the things I would like to dedicate this year to is specifically to when we went to Har Herzl to visit an entire row of Nebuch, brand new graves since October 7th, since Shmini Atzeres, Tav Shin Pei Dalet. There's an entire Azar filled with Chayalim, Nebuch, who gave their lives on Kiddush Hashem. And the day that we went there, we went to the Kvarim to pay our respects and to daven there, and it was the shloshim of one of the Chayalim, Binyamin Meir Early, Hashem Yimkom Domo. And we gave our condolences to the family, and it turned out that the father of this young Chayal actually listens to my dear Shul Mishneh Berurah Yomi Shiurim. And we tried as best as we could to give this family comfort and the strength that they had, and how proud they were of their son, Binyamin Meir, or early. Hashem Yimkom Damam, and all the other Chayalim that are buried there now, all the other Korbanos Nebuch that have occurred even since then. Hashem Yimkom Damam, Hashem should protect the Chayalim. Hashem should give Nechama to all those families that are suffering so much, and who are so brave and are so fearless in their defense of Klal Yisrael. Hashem should help them. Hashem should continue to give them all Hatzlacha. I'm sorry for the somewhat longer introduction than usual. It's been a very moving week, and at some point the time in the shul, maybe at other venues, we'll have a chance to discuss all that we saw and the unbelievable heroism of so many people and the unbelievable Mesiras Nefesh of so many people. Okay, let us begin our learning. We pick up on Omer Aleph, Nun Hei Omer Aleph, about 12 lines from the top with the words Amar Yeshua. This is, according to the Mesos HaShas, it really should say, Amar Yeshua ben Levi, who we had discussed in the previous year, the end of this year. We had an Agadita Gemar with him, and we continue with another Agadita that is said over by Yeshua ben Levi. Amar Yeshua ben Levi, Haroa Tes B'chalomo. If you see the letter Tes, the Hebrew letter Tes, in a dream, Simin Yotalo. This is a very good thing for the person. It's a good Simin for him that they will, Emir Tzashem, see good things. Now, why is that? My time at Gemara asks. So if you're going to tell me, Yilei Mishum Dechsev Tov, because the word Tov begins with the letter Tes, well, that's pretty easy to say. Well, what about the following word? Ema V'tei Teisiyo B'metateya Hashmei. This is a pasuk that we have from Yeshaya, where Rebbe's maidservant taught the Talmidei Chachamim what the word means. It means to sweep up with a broom, but it's talking about it shall cause destruction. Hashem will clear away. Now, albeit this pasuk is talking about destroying our enemies, nevertheless, it's a negative term. And therefore, if you're telling me the word tes stands for tov, and that's why it's a simin tov to see this in a dream, where you could argue, well, the word tetisia is a bad word. It describes destruction, and therefore, how is that a good simin? So it says, you're right. If we just saw two tests for te tisia, you'd be right. But we just saw one test over here, chad test communion, and therefore it's more likely to mean the word tov than the word te tisia, the metateya. Where it says, okay, but there are plenty of, quote, bad words that begin with just a single test. For example, where it says, for the first parak in Eicha, ema tuma sa bishuleha. So her tuma will be inside her shuleha, is the hems of her dress. In other words, there is something that is bad over here. Nobody's going to be able to comfort her, because she has sunk so deeply. So therefore, that's what the full pasuk means. The full pasuk goes as follows: Tumasa bishuleha lo zochra acharisa, batei red ploim eimenachim lo. Nobody will comfort her. So therefore, how can you tell me the letter tes means tov? It could mean tumasa from the pasuk. Tumasa bishuleha. So therefore, seeing the tes, that can't be it. So Gemara says, you're right. What a person, Rabbi Shuv Levi said, sees in his dreams is not just the letter tes, it's tes beis coming in. If you see both the letter tes and the letter beis in your dream, that's going to be the simon that will be good for you. You'll have a simon tov. Gemara says, but there are plenty of words that have a tes and a beis in them that are not a positive connotation. For example, you have in the second parak of Eicha, ema tovu va'aretz shiarel. So the word tovu is tes and beis, and yet, it means that her she'arim, her gates, have sunk into the ground. And here the full pasuk is, Tovu ba'aretz shareha, ibad v'shibar b'richeha. The doors and the locks are all broken. Malkel, Visorea, Vagoyim, and all the people of Nebuchadnezzar are taking hostages. The kings and the officers are amongst the Goyim. In Torah, Gam Nibiel, Lo Matsu, Chazol Me'ashem, and there's no hope over here, and everything seems to be lost. So here you have a test and a base, Tavu, that's a negative connotation. So it says, you're 100% right. Ella. Hoil, the real reason Yeshua Levi said, if you see the word, the letter test in your dream, it's a good simon, is because Elohoil upasach bo akosu l'tovu techila. The first time we find the letter test in the entire Torah is in the pasuk from Shemid Bereishis ad vayar Elokim esor ki tov. So therefore, you have the word. So again, it's always surprising that the editors of the Gemara didn't finish off the whole pasuk. They just said vayar Elokim esor, but they're leaving out the most important part. And that is ki tov. So therefore, the finding of the first time we have the letter tes in the Torah, and it's with the word tov, so therefore that's why it's a good siman for the person. In fact, Chazal tell us often that you can tell by the first time something is written in the Torah what the basic essence of that letter or that word may contain. Okay. So that was a drasha from Yeshua Levi. Another drasha from Yeshua Levi. Another drasha about dreams. He said, "Haroa hesped b'chalomo." If you see a hesped in your dreams, now it doesn't mean that you actually see somebody giving a eulogy. That actually might not be the most auspicious type of a dream. So Rashi tells us, "Teva zu levada hero," that he was shown in his dream just the word hesped. He saw the word eulogy in his dream written out. And therefore, this means, Rabbi Shmuel Levi says, Chosu Allah bin Hashemayim ufida'uhu, that they had mercy upon him in Shemayim, and he will be redeemed from whatever tzara he was destined to have. But this is only if you see it written down. And the Mefarshim explain, when you see it written down, you see the letters. And the letters of Hesped can be like a mnemonic or a jumble, because the Ches and the Hey are interchangeable for Chas Pad, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have mercy on this person and he will redeem him. In other words, whatever this person had done wrong, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgives him, and therefore that's why it's a siman tov, according to Rabbi Shmuel Levi. If you see the hesped, this chas pad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has mercy on you and redeemed you, so it means chas ulam in Shemayim, that's the hes or the chas, and padu is the pad part. Okay, hesped. Gemara continues and tells us, now we go back to the Mishnah, where it said, V'chein chaya v'ov kayos v'emchule, we said, these halachas apply not only to a behema, but they also apply to chayv of all the different halachas that we discussed in the Mishnah yesterday. Amar Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish said, Kan Shona Rebbe, Rebbe, Yehuda Nasi taught us over here that a tarnagol, a chicken, a tavos, which is a certain type of a bird, Rashi gives us these foreign language words for them, the pavin, and if you look in the Lazi Rashi, it's some sort of a goose. Osha Lenekeva, Yesh Zonov Aruch, it has a long beak for the female of the species. And note so sov, its feathers, muguvanos viguvonim yirakrakim, umazirim bitzvoyim yofim. It has these very beautiful feathers that are of many different colors, and they shine. So that's this pavin. Some translate this as a peacock. And then you have the next type of a bird called fisione. Fisione is the famous Gemara where it tells us that sometimes a person can make his father work very hard and yet be mekayim the mitzvah kivud aveim, and sometimes you serve your father pisione, which is like pheasant under glass, and you're nevertheless not mekayim the mitzvah kivud aveim. The Gemara and the Yerushalmi tells us, discuss elsewhere what this is talking about. So just for quickly, it means that a person can take upon themselves various things that their father would have had to have in terms of servitude to the king that would be very degrading, but instead had the father do the manual labor that the son did, and the son undertook the very degrading work that the father did. So there's a child that is honoring his father, even though he's making his father do hard work, but he's not making him do degrading work. He took the degrading work upon himself. And the one who serves his father pheasant under glass sounds like he's real tzaddik. When the father asks him, how can he afford to give me such food? The man says to his father, just eat, old man, don't worry about that. So that person is not mekayim the mitzvah of kibud av v'eim. In any event, these three birds, the chicken, the tabos, this peacock, and this fesioni, this pheasant under glass, so they're all called kilayim zeh b'zeh. In other words, if you were to mate them, or if you were to somehow use them together and work with them in some way, so that would be kilayim. That's what Rehuda Nasi said, that's what Rebbe said. Moses says, pshita, why would you think not? They're three different species. So of course, if the din applies, behema chayeno, so of course it applies there. Samar Chaviva, Chaviva tells us, no, bishum dirabu bahadei adode. Now the simple understanding of this is that they live together. So the Mefarshim explained, you have the Shomitzu Yon Balacha, And he brings down the Rashba that they sit on each other's eggs. So that's why you might think that the chickens and these peacocks and these pheasants, they all live together in such closeness that they're actually able to take care of each other's eggs. And therefore, you might think that they're not kilayim one with the other. Some suggest they can even mate with each other and have progeny. In any event, they're considered separate species. You might have thought, no, the tema menchadu, that it's one species and it's not kilayim, therefore, kamashulan, if you were to go mate them together, you would be over the issa of kilayim. Mark continues, Amar Shmuel, Shmuel tells us, the avos, the regular goose, the avos habar, and a wild goose, kilayim zebzeh. They're two different species, and if you'd mate them together, you'd be over the issue of kilayim. Maskevo Rava, bar Rav Chanan, Rava, the son of Rav Chanan, asked to Shmuel, wait a second, based upon what you're saying, my time, what's the reason why they're two separate species? If you're going to tell me, ilay mamushum dahai orich kuei, vahaya zuter kuei, Rashi explains, the kuei is chartumo, which he says is their beak, the laz. It's their beak, as we say in English. So therefore, one has a long beak and one has a short beak. So is that what it is? So then, if you're telling me that the difference in the beak between the two species is enough to define them as being two species, so then, Elamiata, are you going to tell me Gamla Parsa, a Persian camel, the Gamla Taya, and an Arabic camel? So these types of camels are different because the high Alim Kuei, the high Kotin Kuei, they have different size throats or necks. So the Alim Kuei, the bigger neck is Savaru Av, is a thicker neck, and the thinner neck is the second animal. So you have these Persian camels that have a thick neck, and the Arabic camel has a thinner neck, so they're two separate species? That's not true. They're not two separate species. So where it says, you're right, what's the reason why the avos and the avos habar are two separate species? Because they're beitzah b'chutz. One of them has its beitzim on the outside. Beitzah has zecharos. The testicles of the zachar are nikarim be'avos habar. They're seen in the wild goose b'chutz on the outside. And the regular domesticated type of avos, its beitzim are on the inside of the body. So therefore, that's why the two separate species, and therefore there's kilayim. Rav Papa gives a different reason. Rav Papa mar hatu nechada biyasa b'shichla. It's because the evos habar, the eggs are laid one at a time, whereas the hatu nakama biyasa b'shichla, whereas the regular goose can lay more than one egg at a time, and therefore that's a critical difference between these two species, making them two different species. He says that this din of kilayim, if you were to make two different species of aquatic creatures, so then you'd also be over the iser of kilayim. So, for example, you took a dolphin and a walrus and you were to go and mate them together, so then that would also apply the din of kilayim and you'd be chayev malchus. It's an iser d'oraisa. Gemara asks, my time, why is that? So Amar Rav Ada Bar Ava, Mishmei De'ula, Rav Ada Bar Ava says in the Ula, because it says the word Mineyu by both of them. So it says, Asyo L'Mineyu L'Mineyu Miyabasha. We say over here that there's Xeris Shabbat from the regular animals that are on the Yabasha. And just like there's Kilayim by them, so too there's Kilayim over here by the water animals, the water mammals. And therefore, this Xeris Shabbat, Mineyu Mineyu, comes to teach us that just like there's Kilayim by animals, so too there's Kilayim by the water animals as well, by the water creatures as well. In general, they're probably talking about the mammals that you can mate like this. Fish, you don't mate like this in the same way, so the stomach doesn't apply to fish, but the idea applies to mammals that you could theoretically mate one with the other. Okay. Boy Rachva. Rachva asks the following shaila. What happens, hamanig bi'iza vishibuta, if a person is going to lead a wagon with an iza, which is a goat, which is a land animal, obviously, the shibuta, and this fish known as the shibuta. The Gemara in Chulin on Daf Kuf Teso Mbeis tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the shibuta to teach us what chazir fleish tastes like, what bacon tastes like. So you take the moach, the brains of this shibuta fish, and it tastes exactly like chazir. The Gemara there discusses how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created something that is kosher, for everything that he created is non-kosher. So this moach of the shibuta tastes exactly like chazir. If you ever want to know what chazir, what pork, what bacon tastes like, so you have the moach of this shibuta fish. In any event, so Rachva says, if you were to go and tie a rope to this shibuta fish, and attach it to a wagon, and you attach a goat to this wagon as well, and they're both pulling it. You have it running on the beach or on the right near the shore, and the fish is pulling it, and the goat is pulling it. They're both pulling this wagon, so they're working together. Now, if you did this with a horse and a camel, you'd be chayev over here for kilayim, of working the animals together. So Rachba is asking, what happens if you do this with the shibuta and the iza? Is that kilayim as well? Mahu, what's the halacha? Do we say, v'yamrinu kivin the iza lo nochas b'yam? Do we say, since a goat doesn't go in the water, v'shibuta lo salak v'yasha, and the shibuta fish doesn't go on the ground, so therefore, lo klum of it. You didn't do anything more, because how can they be together when they physically can't coexist? Both can't be on the ground, and both can't be in the water. So therefore, there is no issur of working them together, because they're not together. Or do we say, no, dioma? In fact, hashta miyas komani. The bottom line is, they're both pulling the wagon. So they are working together. What they was to make, one's on the land and one's in the water. So that's the question that Rachba asks. And the Gemara says, maskit lo Ravina. Ravina says, is that really what you're asking? Elamayata, if what you're saying is true, so what's the halacha? Chiber chita usor b'yada. If a person takes a grain of wheat and a grain of barley in his hand, and he goes and plants them together. Bizarra chita ba'aretz usora b'chutzlaretz. But he plants one right on the border of Eretz Yisrael, one in Eretz Yisrael, one outside Eretz Yisrael. So he plants the chita, let's say, in Eretz Yisrael, and he plants usora outside Eretz Yisrael. Now, there is no din of kilayim outside of Eretz Yisrael, midoraisa. So therefore, are you telling me over here that you would be chayiv, hochanami de mechayiv? How could that be? The chita is in Eretz Yisrael with his din of kilayim. The sora is outside of Eretz Yisrael with his no din of kilayim. So too over here, how can you tell me that they're chayiv over here? They're not together. Someone says, that's not an answer. Amrei hochi hashta, how can you compare the two? In the case where the person plants the chita in Eretz Yisrael and the Sawyer, so outside of Eretz Yisrael at the same time, so Hasan Eretz Mekom Chiyuva. Eretz Yisrael, there's a Chiyuv, Chutz La'aretz, Lo Mekom Chiyuva. There's no Issa Deraisa of Kilayim in Chutz La'aretz. So therefore, that can't be a comparable case to our case, because Hocha, Idi Chiyuvahu. They're both Chiyuvim. You're not allowed to do working with two different species in the water. So if you wanted to pull a rowboat and you have these two different species, so then you would be over for pulling with two different species in the water. And if you took a goat and a donkey and you had to pull a wagon, you'd be over two different species. So each of them in their respective areas is definitely an issur. But how can you tell me that when you're mixing the land and the water creature together, that that is in fact a problem? You can't say that one way or the other. And the Gemara is left with the boy of Shitalei, but the post can bring down that we don't know what to do. This is potentially an issur deraisa. So therefore we go l'chumra. And we wouldn't allow the Shibuta and the A's to go and pull a wagon. Okay, this concludes the beautiful fifth parak. Hadron lecha shor shenoga hasapara. Hadron lecha shor shenoga hasapara. Hadron lecha shor shenoga hasapara. And we turn to Nun Hei Amud Beis. We begin the beautiful sixth parak. Many people start learning Gemara with this parak Hakones, very famous parak. And we begin Hakones Tzon Lodir. If a person brings his sheep inside the corral, and the Noal Bifonel Kipoy, and then he closes the door behind it in a normal fashion, that is a proper shmira. So he closes the door, he locks the door behind him. The noa b'fonel karoi, he does what he's supposed to do, so the animals theoretically shouldn't be able to get out. The yotza, but somehow it did get out. We had earlier in the Masechta already, we discussed how it got out, it tunneled under, whatever, however it got out, the yotza of Hezekiah, and then it did some sort of damage. Let's say it went and ate, or it trampled in another person's yard and ruined his crops. So in that situation, Potter, the owner of the tzon, the owner of the sheep, is not mechuyev to pay for the damage that his sheep did by, let's say, a shein or regel from eating or walking, because he closed the door behind it properly. What's a person supposed to do? He can't fault somebody. He closed the door properly. Tosos in the top, Tosos discusses why is this perek over here and not at a different point in the Masechta. So Tosos explains why this perek is over here. I ain't showing the top Tosos. In any event, if you lock the door properly, you're going to be potter. However, lo noal before neil karoi, if you didn't lock it properly, you didn't close the barn door and the animal got out. So then in that situation, lo noal before neil karoi, so then the yotz of Ezekiel, the sheep got out and it went to damage by eating or trampling. So then you are chayev to pay. The owner of a sheep didn't watch it properly. He's a posheya, and therefore he has to go and pay. Now, nifritz or balayla, however, if the corral was somehow broken into at night, or sheparzu listen, or robbers broke into it at night, so the owner doesn't know that this is going on, so you can't hold him at fault. He had locked it properly, and then it opened up somehow, natural damage occurred to it, or robbers came and broke it. So in this situation, he didn't know about it. What is he supposed to do about it? So Potter, he also doesn't have to pay in this situation for the damage that the sheep did. However, Hotsu listed, if the listim themselves took it out, not that they just made the breach, so then they're only a grumma, that's why they're Potter. But if the listim actually took the animal out, let's say they wanted to steal it, and they tried to take it out, but somebody, they heard a police siren, and they just left it over there. So now it's outside, they brought it outside, and now it does damage. So then, when these robbers are caught, listim chayov, and those robbers will have to pay for any damage that the sheep did. Then the Mishnah continues, if the owner, hinicha b'chava, he left this sheep inside the corral, in the sun, and that is obviously going to get the animal all riled up, because it's uncomfortable for it in the sun. And therefore, even though he locked the door properly, in that situation, he's going to be chayiv. Because in the hot sun, Rashi explains, in hinicha b'chava, mitzara lo, it's going to make it very upset. It's going to cause pain to the animal from the sun. Mitzara lo shimsha, v'lo sagi lei b'ni'ilu kiroi. And therefore now, a regular lock on the door will not do it, because the animal is going to be so angered, so hot, and in such difficulty, it's going to kick and kick and kick until it knocks down even the regular lock. And the Gemara will explain over here, Dainu Delashiho Lama Baruch Matsuya. This was a door that normally would be able to stand up in a normal wind, but it wasn't able to stand up to this very angry sheep. Okay, so if he leaves it out in the sun, or alternatively, Oshim Masu L'Cheir Shot V'Kartun, who can't watch it properly, he gives it over to these mentally incompetent people, the Cheirish, who can't speak or hear, and is by definition considered incompetent. Shota, a person who's psychologically deranged. The Kartun, a person who doesn't have das because of his age, he's less than bar mitzvah, and they were the ones that were entrusted to watch this sheep, the Yotz of Ezekiel, and it got out and it escaped. So the owner of the sheep is Chayev, the Cheirish, the Kartun, are always part there, they're not Bar-hachi, they're not capable. So therefore, they're not held liable. But because the owner gave it over to somebody who's not capable of protecting it, so then the owner didn't do what he should have done and did pshia. He was negligent. And therefore, the owner is chayav. However, misaro l'roeh, if he handed it over to a normal, appropriate shepherd and said, please watch my flocks, or I'm going to pay you to watch my flocks. So the shepherd now is taking his place in terms of responsibility. So if you give your sheep over to the shepherd, nichnas ro tachtav. So the shepherd now assumes your responsibility to make sure that the animal is watched properly. Then the Mishnah continues, Nofla Lagina Venanis, if the animal was in an area, let's say that was above the Rishus HaRabim, Rashi says, in the situation that Ba'ones Migag Bala, the animal fell from the rooftop of the owner of the animal, and it's right next to this Gina of his friend. So the animal fell from a higher point of the Mazik's property into the Nizak's property, and it went then ate stuff in the Nizak's property. Or Rashi says, Shoyso Rishus Rabim Gavo Minagina, it was walking in Rishus Rabim, which was above this garden, this orchard, and it falls in there. Now, it then gets up and eats in that yard. North Logina of Ananis went and ate inside this garden that it fell into. So the owner of this sheep, Mishalemis Mash Ananis, has to go and pay for what benefit the animal received from eating here. Now, the Gemara will explain what this means. We'll explain this more in the Mishnah in a moment. Yardur kidaka vizika. But if you allowed it to go down there, it wasn't locked up properly, and you allowed it to go there, so then, mishalemis mashizika, then you have to go and pay for the damage that you actually did, and not just the benefit that you got. The simple understanding over here is that the animal's benefit is, well, you would have to pay $5 for lunch. Now you didn't have to pay $5 for lunch. So even though it ate $20 worth of fruit, because you wouldn't have given it fruit, you would have given it barley, which is much cheaper. But you would have had to pay $5 for lunch. So that's what's called Mishalemis Ma Shenanis, that you didn't have to go and pay the $5 for lunch. As opposed to if you were negligent, so then it caused $20 worth of damage. You have to go pay the $20, not the fact that you just saved you $5 for not having to buy lunch. And the Mishnah now really says, Ketzer Mishalemis Ma Shezik, how do we define, what is the way to determine how much damage it did that you pay Mishalemis Ma Shezik, you pay for the damage that you did. How do you calculate that? So, Shomin Beis Saw Beosu Saw there. You go and evaluate a field that is a saw, which is 2,500 square amma, and you go and take that base saw and see how much a person would be willing to pay for it when it's full of produce. Shom base saw b'osa saw the kamai saw yofet when it was in its best situation. How much you pay for it, and then with the damage that was done, how much you pay for it. The kamai yofet now that it was damaged. So, for example, a fully laden field would be worth $5,000, and it had one row of damage that was eaten by the sheep. It's worth $4,990. So it's only $10 worth of damage. Even though if you went and sold those fruit, it would be $50. So therefore, you pay ma shehizika, what the damage is by evaluating it in the total field minus the value of the field when it has one row of damage, which is different than the actual damage that the person lost for what he would have been able to sell that row of, let's say, vegetables for. That's the opinion of Tanakhama. Rav Shimon disagrees. Rav Shimon Omer, Ochlo peiros gemurim, if the animal ate regular produce that was ready to be sold, it was already mature, so mishalem es peiros gemurim. So he would have sold it for $50. You got to give him $50 for it. Im sosai. And it depends how much he ate. If he ate his saw, so you have to pay him for his saw's worth of that fruit or vegetable. Im sosai, it was two saw's worth. You have to pay him for two saw's worth. In other words, Rav Shimon says, no. You don't go and evaluate the field fully laden and then laden minus one row, because that's better for the mazik that's worth for the nizak. He says, no, we do it in the best way for the nizak, which is, well, if you'd sold this row of crops, how much would you have gotten for it? So that's how much you have to pay. That's Rabbi Shimon's opinion, and more we'll discuss this in more detail, and let's start the war right now. Mar starts off by quoting the following brayso, Tanur Rabbanan. Ezel Kuroi, Ezel Shalok Kuroi. What is the definition of locking the door properly and not locking the door properly? So the Gemara says, Dela Sheyachol Olamo Beruach Mitzuyo Ezel Kuroi. If you locked it so that the door is locked in a way that a normal wind for that area, right? The winds are different on the top of the Himalayas than it is in the, you know, in an area that is surrounded by tall buildings and there's very little wind over there. So in that area, what would be necessary to withstand a normal wind in that area, that's Ruach Mitzuya in that area. So if the door could withstand such a wind, so that's called, you locked it properly, Zeo Kuroi. If She'en Yechol Labo Ruach Mitzuya, even though the winds are 10 miles an hour, this door is so flimsy that it would get knocked down with a 10 mile an hour wind, which is normal for that area, so that's not called locking the door. Zeo Shalok Kuroi, and therefore that's called negligence, and that's why you're chayv. Rimani Barpati says, Man Tano Muad Desagile Bishmir Bechusa. So from our Mishnah, it says that all you need to do is what's called Kiroi, which we've explained previously. We define it as a Shmira Bechusa, a lesser Shmira. Not that it's lesser in that it's not adequate, it's adequate, but it's not as good as locking it in a way that would even prevent the hurricane, right? You can build a building that can withstand the hurricane, or you can build the building that will withstand only the normal winds. You normally don't have hurricanes, so it doesn't have to withstand the hurricane. So that's called a Shmira Ma'ayasa, that it can withstand the hurricane, and it's called a Shmira Bechusa, which means the normal Shmira. It's lesser than the hurricane Shmira, but it's normal Shmira. That's called Shmira Pechusa. So who's the author of a Mishnah that says that a Muad, we're dealing here in the Mishnah with a Muad, it didn't mention anything about Chatzi Nezek. So who's the author of Muad that it's saying that it's Sagile, it's enough to watch a Muad with Shmira Pechusa, with a regular Shmira. You don't need a Shmira Ayisa. Now, we had pointed out previously when we learned this din, in the Gemara, we had said that seems to be counterintuitive because it would seem to make sense that a Muad should be watched more strictly than a Tam. But here, Ramani Bapatya says, who's the author that says that a Muad only requires a Shmir Bechusa and a Tam requires a Shmir Ma'ayisa? So we explained that the reason why it's not counterintuitive is because one of the explanations, there are many, many explanations. One is because a Muad has a shame for it. It's famous for being a dangerous ox. And therefore, everybody else has to be prepared to guard themselves against damage from this very dangerous ox, and therefore it only requires a regular Shmira and not a Shmira Ma'ayisa. In any event, a Tam requires a Shmira Ma'ayisa, and a Muad only requires a Shmira Pechusa. Who's the author of our Mishnah? So, Rabbi Yehuda. This goes in accord with the opinion of Yehuda, because we learned in the Mishnah, and again, we had this Mishnah earlier on Daf Mem Hei, and the Mishnah there said, the Tanan, Kisharo Ba'ala Bimoseva. If the owner tied up his ox in a normal fashion with the reins, the Na'alafav Kiroi, or he closed the corral gate with a proper type of a lock, Vyotzavizik, and yet somehow the ox got out and it did damage, so then, Echot Tam V'Echot Mu'ot Chayim. Divi Rameya. Rameya says this is a regular Shmira, this is not a Shmira Ma'ayisa. Nevertheless, there's no difference between the Tam and the Muad. He holds, we don't distinguish between the Tam and the Muad. They all require a Shmira Ma'ayisa. It's not enough to do a Shmira pechusa, a regular shmira. So obviously, Rav Meir can't be the author of our Mishnah, which says that a regular shmira, normal part of kirai, is good. So then, who is the author of our Mishnah? As we pointed out, Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda is the author of our Mishnah because Rav Yehuda Omer Tom Chaya. If this was an animal that was a tam, so then you need a shmira ma'ayasa, and it's not good enough if you just put the reins around the animal and tied it up, or you lock the door in a normal way. In that situation, if the ox got out and it's a tam, it hasn't gored previously 3 times, tam chayav. The owner of this short tam would in fact be chayav. But if it was a mu'ad, you'd be potter, because, as I pointed out, one possible reason is because everybody knows it's a mu'ad, has a shame around it, and everybody stays away from it, and therefore a regular shmir is adequate. And this is based upon the pasuk shenemar, the lo yishmeru ba'alav. The pasuk tells us, "O no daki shor nagahu." You know that it's a muad shor mitmol shel shom. It's gored 2 or 3 times before. We had that machlokus earlier as well. Does it have to gore 2 times and on the 3rd time it's a muad, or does it have to gore 3 times and on the 4th time it's a muad? So this is that machlokus. In any event, it's a muad. But lo yishmeru b'lav. Only the muad requires a shmira. Shalei mishalei. In that situation, you can get away with a regular shmira. Review the omer tam chayev, but a tam. It requires more than a regular shmira, but a mu'ad is potter. As long as you did a regular shmira, the mu'ad is potter, the tam is not. That's our author of our Mishnah. It's Rabbi Yehuda. Based upon this pasuk, only if the owner didn't guard it with a regular shmira is he chayav. But if he guarded it with a regular shmira and it's a shor mu'ad, that's adequate. That's Rabbi Yehuda Shita. And it's the tam that requires the shmira ba'ayisah. Because the shama who's that? Because this animal requires a regular shmira as opposed to a tam that requires a shmira ba'ayisa. That's the second opinion, the opinion of Yehuda, and that seems to be in accord with the author of our Mishnah. Then we have Rabbi Elazar Shita. Rabbi Elazar Omer, no, ein lo shmira l'sakin. There's no way to properly watch a shamuot. It's a dangerous animal, and the only way to watch it is to shecht it, so it can't go and kill. So go and shecht it for its meat. As long as it's around, there's no way you can properly watch it, even with a shmira ba'ayisa. So therefore, Mani Bar Pati says that the author of our Mishnah goes in accord with Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara answers, no. Afilu Tema Rabbi Meir. It could even be the opinion of Rabbi Meir, because Shaini Shem Varegel, that Torah Miyato Bishmirasa. By Shem Varegel, the Torah tells us that according to Rabbi Meir, here everybody is acceptable for a Shmira Pechusa. It's only by a Muad that we distinguish over here between a Tam and a Muad. But if something is a muad, like by Shein Regel, there is no din of Chatzin Ezek, there is no din of Tam by Shein Regel. So therefore, even Rav Meir would agree in that situation that the Shmira Pechusa, the regular Shmira, would be adequate. And we see this because, in fact, the Amar Rabbi Elazar, here, this is the Amora Rabbi Elazar, he tells us, Amilam Mastisiton, others say it was a Braisa, that says, Arbor Dvar Matorah Miyato Bishmirasa. There are 4 things which the Torah said are adequate with just the regular Shmira. Shmira Pechusa, Miyato Bishmirasa. What are they? The Elohim, Bor, the Eish, Shein Varegel. These 4 types of damages, a pit, Eish is a fire, Shein Varegel. By eating something or by walking normally on something, the owner is only expected to do a shmira pechusa, a regular shmira. The Torah gave us permission that you don't need a shmira ma'ayisa. And here, shein v'regel, don't require shmira ma'ayisa. That is, therefore, Rav Meir agrees with this then, and therefore our mission doesn't have to be Rav Yehuda only, it could even be Rav Meir. Where do we see these 4 items that they require only a regular shmira bar? To see the pasuk says, the real gear says v'chi yiftach bar. That's what the pasuk. That's what the actual pasuk says. The person opens up a bar v'chi yifti ish bar. O ki yichre ish bar. We had this pasuk many times previously as well, where he digs a pit lo yichaseinu, and he doesn't cover it up, implying only if he's negligent, he doesn't cover it up, that he's going to be chayav. Ha potter hachi so potter. But if he did cover it up, then he would be potter. This is the first case example of the 4. The shmir b'chusa, regular shmir, is acceptable. Eish, where do we see that a regular shmir is acceptable by Eish? Because see, the pasuk says, all these sukkim are from Mishpatim, shalei mishalei mamavir es habeira. The beginning of the pasuk is talking about Eish, ki tseitse Eish, umuatzot kotzim v'nechal gadish, o akaba o asadeh, shalei mishalei mamavir es habeira. Only if it's a case of him sending it out. Shalem shalem hamavir esabeira ad obid kein mavir. It's like a person actually lit something. So if you're negligent and you lit something, then you're chayv. However, if you lit something and you weren't negligent, you did a regular shmirah, so then you're going to be potter. So that's what the Gemara is telling us over here. Shalei mishalei hamavir sabeira. If you did it in a way like a person setting something to fire, then you chayav. Ad ovid ke'ein mavir. You had to actually be posheya and light something. Then you're going to be chayav. You lit the match to the haystack, so then you'll be chayav for the haystack. But if you were barbecuing something, you put the appropriate precautions into place, and then a wind blew some sparks, an unusual wind came and blew the sparks and burned down the haystack, so then you're going to be potter. You're not obligated to do the shmira ma'al yisa. The next case was Shane and Regel. So Shane, they said, ubier b'steyacher, and it went and ate in another person's field, which teaches us, ad do'ovid ke'ein uvier. It uses this lashon uvier to teach us it has to be the same type of negligence that we just had for a fire. So if you did that in the same way of negligence, you're chayav. But if you did a regular shmir, you're not. And similarly by regel, the psid, v'shilaches bi'iro bi'er b'steyacher, ad ovin ke'ein v'shilach. So in this situation as well, you have to do a proper watching to be potter. And if you don't do a proper watching, so then you're going to be chayav. So all four of these cases are dealing here with a regular shmira, and ergo, you see that Shane Verega, a regular shmira is fine, and even Rabbi Meir agrees with that. Now, another bryce that says, Vitanya, Vishilach Zeharega, when we had these words, Vishilach Ubier, how do we know it's all about Shane Verega? So we learned this earlier in the Sefer as well, Vishilach Zeharega, V'chein Oem Mishalche Regel Ashor V'chamor, because we have another place where it uses this lashon of Shilach, referencing regel of the shor and chamar, and ubir, that's shein, that's actually a reference to eating. The chen omer kasha yivar hagolol ad tubo, like the tooth eats it up until it's all gone. So we had discussed that a lot more earlier in the Masechta. So these words of shilach and bir are a reference to shein v'regel, and that's what we see, that shein v'regel require only a regular shmira and not a shmira ma'ayisa. And that's where our Mishnah could be Rav Meir as well as Rav Yehuda. Now, that comes to teach us that only if you were negligent, if you did it in those sorts of ways, then you're going to be chayav. Ha, lo ovid, but if you didn't do it in that sort of a way, you weren't negligent, you just did a regular shmira, then lo, you would not be chayav. Ah, so therefore, while Rav Meir normally requires a shmira ayisa, that's only for keren, that's for an area where we have a tam and a muad. But with something as a muad milichatchila, such a shein v'rego, so then he only requires a regular shmira. And Omar Rabbi says, Taka, this is right. Masnisa nami daika. You can actually see this rationale being correct from our Mishnah. Interestingly, until now we've had Sharsha Nagah. We're dealing over here with Negicha. We're dealing over here with the damages of Keren of Ashur. And suddenly we switched over here and we say Hakones Son Lodir. Why didn't it say Hakones Shor Lodir? So it says over here, the Tani Tzau, Michte, Bishar Kwaskin and the Yossi. Until now we've been talking about oxen. So Mr. Shar, why didn't our Mr. say Hakones Shor Lodir? Maishno the Tani Tzau, why didn't it say Hakones Son Lodir? Oh, Lab Mishum, isn't it to teach us that Torah Miyata Bishmira Asan, to teach us that a Shmira Behus is acceptable for Shane Varego? Why? Lab Mishum the Khan Karen Lok Sivabe. Isn't it because there is no mention over here of Karen? It's talking about a sheep. A sheep doesn't have Karen type of damages, and therefore, Shane Varegel, who lives in Bay, and therefore it must be talking about Shane Varegel, and therefore the answer we gave is a good answer. But our Mishnah can even go according to Reb Meir. And the Kamash Rulon, the Shane Varegel, the Muadan who, Shmamina, since Shane Varegel are Muadan from the very beginning, there is no Tom in regards to Shane Varegel, and yet we see that a Shmira Pechusa is acceptable, therefore this is exactly like Reb Meir, Lavdavka is it only like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, since we gave the case over here where there were four things that the Brisa had taught, where Shmira, Pechus is acceptable, so Tanya, we're learning another Brisa, Omer Yeshua, Yeshua tells us, Arba Dvarim, these four things, also Osan, if somebody does them, Potter B'dini Adam, V'chai B'dini Shemai, a person will be not held liable in a Beis Din, but he would be held liable by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and if he wants to be Yotze, what's the right thing to do, he should pay back B'dini Shemai. In other words, a Beis Din can't force you to pay, but if you want to do the right thing, you should go and pay. What are these four things? If you open up the wall in front of your friend's animal, and the animal, therefore, can get out. Now, the situation here is that the person, technically, who owns this, doesn't have to go and pay because he'd locked his gate. But the one who broke it down, so he technically doesn't have to pay because it's only a groma b'nizokin. He didn't cause the damage. He just allowed the animal to get out. As Rashi says, v'yotzisa behema ubarcha. So the animal escaped, and now the animal's on the loose. So he's only a groma b'nizokin, but if you want to do the right thing, well, basin can't make you pay. So if you broke that fence and let the animal out, so then you should go and pay for the damage that it did. That's number one. If you go take a person's grain and you bend it towards the fire. What exactly does this mean? So Rashi explains, litzad hadleika, you turn the grain, the sheaves, towards the fire, kadesha tevara bo'esh, this way the fire can reach it. Let's say there was some block that the fire wouldn't be able to reach it, and you bent this, and now the fire can reach it. So again, you're a groma b'nizokin, you didn't directly burn it, you just allowed it to get burned. So b'day adam, you're not going to be held liable. However, you did obviously something terrible here, and therefore b'day shemayim, if you want to be yotzi b'day shemayim, you should pay. That's the second thing. The third one is Basocher Ede Shekel Lahoy. If you go and hire false witnesses to go and testify. Now, you obviously aren't held liable. You didn't testify. But you hire these false witnesses. So they're going to have to go and pay. But you really should be the one that should also go and compensate because you were the one that hired them. Basocher Ede Shekel Lahoy. So you're only indirectly causing this damage. But since you are really the one causing the damage, so b'day adam, a basin can't go and hold you accountable, but shemayim they will, and therefore if you want to be yotzi b'day shemayim, you should go and pay. That's the third, and finally here's the fourth, b'yadei edus l'chaveru. You know testimony for your friend, however, ain't no mebo, but you're scared to go to court, you don't go to court, you say, I don't want to be bothered by this, so you're causing the friend the loss, because you would win the case for him, but without you, he has no case. So therefore, in this scenario, you're also only a groma b'nizokin, and you're only indirectly causing the loss. But bottom line is, you're causing the loss, and therefore, you are held liable b'day shemayim. And if you want to be yotzi b'day shemayim, you have to go pay. So these are the four things that Rabbi Yeshua tells us that you're held liable only in shemayim, albeit a beis din cannot force you to go pay, but you should. Now, let's go dissect them. We'll just do one, and we'll get us to the next omen. Amamar. So we go and dissect the brayso. The first part was haparitz gedim b'nei behemes chavero. What exactly is the scenario? Hechi dami. They were talking about that you broke the wall in front of your friend's animal. So I had explained this before the way a small number of the rishonim do, and that is that you're chayev for the animal bidei shemayim, but not for the animal damage that it caused. But here we're talking. The Gemara says, according to Rashi and according to many rishonim, we're talking about the wall itself. Hechi dami. Ilema b'kosul bari. If you damage a real wall, so you're talking about the damages to the wall. It was a sturdy wall. So b'dini yodam nami mechayv. Why would we say that this is a grom nizakim? You damaged the wall. It's direct damage to the wall. If you're not talking about the animal, we're talking about the wall. So then, of course, you should be chayv. You damaged the wall. That's not a grom of nizakim. That's nizakim. So of course, you should be chayv. Why would you say b'dini shemayim mechayv? B'dini yodam you're not. No, b'dini yodam nami mechayv. So obviously, the Gemara says Elam. We turn to Nunvav Amud Aleph. We're talking here about Bekosel Ra'ua. Rashi says the lo ifsedei the lemistar koi. This wall is scheduled to be knocked down tomorrow. It's scheduled to be knocked down next week, and you knock it down now. So you're not really causing him any damage. But at the same time, you knocked his wall down. So therefore, b'dei adam, you can't be held liable. But if you want to do the right thing, so then you should go and pay him back. Let's already go through the other three cases here. They're relatively short, then we'll stop. So Gemara says, Amamar, we caught the second case. Hakofev komosu shechaveru b'fnei hadleikah. You go and turn his grain towards the fire, so you indirectly cause the damage. Hechidam, what's exactly the case? Ilema demachule beruach mitzuya. If you turned it there, and now a regular wind is going to reach it there, so then, b'dini adam namilchai. That's not a grom minizokim, that's actually causing the damage. Because the wind, a regular wind, can now reach it. So you're actually causing the damage that way. So Gemara says, you're right, Ela Demati Baruch She'enu Mitzuya. We're dealing here with a wind that's not a normal wind. So even though you bent it, a normal wind would not be able to go and cause it damage. But it's Baruch She'enu Mitzuya. Rashi says, Demidi Delosaika Daitihi. You never thought about that, and therefore you can't be held accountable B'dini Adam. But the bottom line is, you caused the damage, so you should be held accountable B'dini Shemai. Ravashi gives a different teretz. He says, Ravashi Omar, Tomun Itmar. We're dealing over here where the sheaves of grain were actually concealed, they were tumbled. So you didn't know that the fire was going to go and cause this damage. Yishum deshavio tumun be'esh. This is like tumun be'esh is not chayev with fire. So if you have kalim inside a haystack, so the esh is only chayev for the haystack, it's not chayev for the kalim that are inside. And therefore, what are we doing over here? We're making this person essentially hid the grain. He's talking about tomun itmar, that he hid the grain, so therefore the fire technically is not going to be chayiv for it. So he's a groma in making the fire owner not liable anymore for his fire. And therefore, you're indirectly causing the nizak to be damaged because now the mazik won't have to pay him. So therefore, bidei adam, you can't be held liable, but bidei shemayim, you're held liable. So we have Rav Ashi over here, as well as the first teretz that we gave, that it's talking about a ruach she'ena metzuya. They're both valid teretz. They're not arguing necessarily with each other. They're two different opinions. That's how we could fulfill this scenario of case number two with hakofev komasu shechaveru b'fnei adleik. Then we have case number three. Omamar has socher a deshekir. If you go and hire false witnesses to go and testify, so then you only chayv bidei shemayim. So what's the sechidam? What are you talking about? Ilel anashay. If you hire these people to go and give you personal benefit over here, so Mamona boy shlumi, so why wouldn't you have to pay? You caused this person to have to pay you now, or that you didn't have to pay them. So why are you saying you chayv only here bidei shemayim? Bidei adam nami mechayv. You should chayv bidei adam as well. Well, this is still somewhat of an indirect type of a damage in that you hired these witnesses, but the bottom line is you did this to either not have to pay yourself or to make him pay you. So therefore, you would have to go and pay. So if you're dealing over here with this type of a scenario, you hired false witnesses for yourself, so bidini adam nami mechayev. Someone says, no, you didn't hire them for yourself, a little chavri, so you're not getting any direct benefit from this, and therefore, you're only causing a grama bini zakin here that you're not going to be liable bidei adam, but would be liable bidei shemayim. And finally, the fourth and final case was like, you know testimony of your friend, but you don't give it. So, b'mayiskin, what are we talking about? If you're telling me that he was one of two witnesses, so then pshita, of course, he should be chayav b'dini shemayim, because d'oraisi, the pasuk tells us, in lo yagiv in asavu, no. The pasuk tells us, if you don't give testimony, then you'll be held liable. So, of course, you're liable b'dini shemayim. So, why would you think that you're not liable b'dini shemayim? Obviously, you didn't cause any direct damage, so bidei adam, you certainly can't be, but obviously, you're chayav bidei shemayim. So Gemara says, ela b'chad, we're dealing over here with a single witness, and therefore, a single witness can't actually go and take money from one person to another. All it does is require sometimes a shvua. As Rashi says, ela b'chad, shemechayvo shvua. You can, by your single testimony, at least make a shvua. Ubedinin shemayim b'chayev, and therefore, you're chayav bidei shemayim. Because if you would come to testify, the guy would have had to make a shvua, and maybe maybe he wouldn't have sworn falsely because you're really telling the truth and you knew the truth. But you're not telling it, he doesn't have to make a shvua, and therefore he doesn't pay the money. Whereas if you had made him make a shvua, he wasn't going to swear falsely and he would have paid the money. So therefore, we're dealing over here with a single witness, and therefore that's why you're chayav bidini shemayim. Albeit, of course, you're not going to be chayav bidini adam. These are the four. The Gemara is going to ask tomorrow, Vesu Lekka, aren't there any others? And we'll go through that tomorrow. But this is a good break point. Again, I want to especially mention that it was so moving that we read the Shloshim of this Chayal, this holy person, Binyamin Meir Early. And we met his parents and we met his grandparents. And to see such unbelievable strength and to see such Mesiris Nefesh on behalf of this Chayal and all the other Chayalim that we saw in Har Herzl, this entire section that was before Shmini Atzeres is a beautiful grassy area with absolutely no graves, and now is Nebuch filled with graves. Hashem Yimkom Domam, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should allow the Chayolim to be safe, to be healthy, to have a Rufuas HaNefesh, Rufuas HaGuf for all those that are in need of it, and to be successful in the mission to eradicate the wicked, evil, vile Hamas, Harishoyim, Yemach Shemam, Zichram.